So that'll be sort of, that'll determine a lot, I think, of what happens next. And there is this version of confidence stuff coming. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I think of that, but yeah, it's a bit of a, it's a, I mean, it's depressing.
Yeah.
It's also kind of after quite a long period of sort of no kind of movement, something is happening.
Yes.
Which is
very positive.
Which is really a big thing.
Do you have much faith in yourself? Probably you become disillusioned with it all, though, don't you?
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, the likes of you, and these organisations are on the ground doing real work, you know, and trying.
Yeah. Look, and I think we've all realised how this stuff is going to, you know, the stuff that we try to do at this level, is going to be meaningless. I mean, if the state is like captured by the Russians, which is what's happening, and you know, there's no money for anything, and there's like widespread stability, then
what happened?
You know, sanitation and policing and housing, that stuff becomes like
irrelevant. Yeah.
And there's very little that we'll be able to do. So. Yeah, it's quite a difficult moment.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I mean, it seems like it's difficult everywhere.
I was about to say, I thought 2016 was the year the world went mad. I don't know, maybe it's 2017. Because it just doesn't seem to be getting.
Yeah.
And you talk about it and you say it out loud, and even my 8-year-old is aware of the whole situation, and I'm going, this can't be right, this can't be. All these years later, I was talking to Fiace yesterday, and he had said, you know, it's like 20 odd years from this constitution, but who's really free? You know, we're the same back home, about to be nearly 20 years after this Good Friday Agreement, and all this promise of equality, and you've still grown inequality, and nobody will stand up and say, you know, Catholics in North Belfast are at a massive disadvantage, even though it's true. And then going, what's wrong with these people? You know, these politicians have grown up in that area, they're from that area, and now all of a sudden they're taking a massive wage and don't want to know. I suppose that's what you find, isn't it? Then there's us at the bottom of the pecking line, trying our best. At least we have it.
I guess also the tricky thing with this stuff is that there's like local and global.
Yes.
So there's, you know, in South Africa, the inequality in South Africa is obviously is extreme, and it's racialized.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's the right, like an extreme rise of global inequality.
True.
Between countries and within countries, which is also the result of a whole lot of other factors,
yep.
Automation. Various other things. So, I also think that we often try. I'm sure, like you have a similar. Certainly in South Africa, there's a high degree of like South African exceptionalism. People think that South Africa is like alone.
Yes.
Is going is experiencing.
Yeah, it's just them. Yeah.
It's just us, and it's because of our very particular problems and our very particular history. And obviously, our history is part of it, but
there's
not
much more. Yeah.
And if you try and only deal with them thinking that way, I think you're going to have a problem.
Problem, yeah.
I mean, like, what's happening in the US, for me, one of the scariest parts of the US situation is that Donald Trump is rolling back all the post-2008 financial regulations. I mean, that to me is like probably the most frightening. Because that's going to affect everyone. That's going to affect the global politics.
And he's running a country. They voted him to run a country.
Yeah.
That gives us hope. It has to give us a hope that one day we can run a country. Because he's spent the past, 30 years of his life playing golf. What does he know about running a country? Like, I really couldn't believe it.
Did you hear the interview with him the other day where he was like, he says, you know, I didn't think it would be this hard.
Sean's given me a list. He doesn't trust me. I don't trust me. He, was it the sanitation? Was that the big campaign? Can't remember the last time we were here.
Sanitation and policing.
And policing, yes. So it was just really like an update on things like that, your strategies, your tactics.
When were you here?
We were last here in October, start of October.
So the sanitation work, and that type of thing, we basically, I think by that point we had already launched a court case against the city of Cape Town. And that case has now been sort of proceeding. It hasn't been heard yet in the court. There've been various delays. Because there's been a lot of sort of backwards and forwards with the lawyers, with the city's lawyers, around documents that we're trying to get from them in order to actually respond to their response. So there's all that kind of stuff which has been delaying things. What's interesting about the case and what's sort of shifted our strategies a little bit is that, so the case basically said informal settlements are not temporary, but the city has been prioritizing temporary services and they actually need to prioritize permanent infrastructure. And the city's response in essence was, well, we are providing toilets, we're doing it through the informal settlement upgrading programs, the housing program. And we know that that's a fiction because the housing those programs are so, the scale is so small that they essentially don't exist. And so that's given kind of like that sort of opened the case or pushed the case into quite interesting terrain where it's actually now sort of goes to the heart of what we've been trying to do with this campaign for years, which is getting to the temporariness issue. And the way in which the state treats informality as temporary, it doesn't plan for it, isn't even trying to bring it into the city, incorporate into the city, not just geographically, but like through, you know, budgets and services. So So what's happening now is that we are still working on responses to the case, to their papers around that issue. And because of, so like partly because of the way they responded, but also just where the sort of campaign was,
mm-hmm.
we're now building it into a new, a sort of an additional layer where sanitation was always just a representative of something bigger,
yep.
which was these issues around services, safety, etc. So not like we're a sector organization.
No.
So what's happened now is that we're moving more into the broader informal settlement upgrading issue.
Okay.
And so if say like these artists kicked out the informal settlement, over here we have the informal settlements which are part of like the formal upgrading program.
Okay.
And then over here you have all of this. And this is like the majority. So a lot of the sanitation work in this case is actually like this.
Yeah.
Because these areas are not part of upgrading programs, yet they've existed for decades and they aren't getting to permanent infrastructure. So this is where the case sort of focuses. So what we're now doing is starting the campaign to now start focusing on this.
Okay.
To start actually removing like that.
Yep.
So that more areas, more informal settlements become part of the formal upgrading program. But we're trying to avoid it just looking at it from a housing perspective,
mm-hmm.
and which is something we've, you know, I think we've historically generally done. I mean, we've historically tried not to look at it just from a housing perspective,
yep.
and look at it from a perspective around spatial apartheid,
yep.
And dealing with spatial injustice, and building neighborhoods, building a city that we want,
mm-hmm.
you know. And unfortunately, a lot of the housing programs, housing sort of strategy in South Africa, and the way of looking at housing has been very focused, I'm sure you've seen, it's been very focused on sort of like a single unit house.
Yep.
Site and service,
yep.
and then you get your plot, and then you
have to cross it. Yep.
And it's been, I mean, in my view, it's a devastating way of dealing with the problem.
Crisis,
because
right.
all it's done is created increased sprawl,
mm-hmm.
push people further out
right.
of the city. And you don't just see it in the city, I mean, every town it's the same, you see a similar problem where
mm-hmm.
you have the town and then the township.
Yep.
And then on the outskirts of the township, the housing has been built.
Yep.
And there's no attempt at actually trying to build housing inside the town or
yep.
inside the city.
Yep.
And not just like, I mean, Reclaim the City is obviously looking at like inner city social
yes,
housing.
Yep.
But I'm not even just talking about that. Like, I'm talking about just in the areas that are just
yes.
just moving inwards.
As opposed to outwards, yeah.
As opposed to outwards.
Yep.
So like a lot of people in into like out that way, past by nature.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of greenfield developments where there's like a lot of houses built. But again, that's even further than Khayelitsha. So even for people who work in Khayelitsha, it makes it harder
to
get to work in Khayelitsha. Because it's like across the highway, it's very difficult to get public transport this side and that stuff. Yeah, so with the informal settlement upgrading work, we're not just taking it for granted that the existing programs are good.
Mm-hmm.
And we at the moment we're in a sort of exploratory phase where we're trying to figure out, you know, do we want to just push for scaling up of the existing programs? Or do we want to say that actually this whole thing is broken
mm-hmm.
and we need something completely different? In order to deal with informality. So that's basically where things are with the sanitation and stuff. And the final point just about the case is that one of the struggles with this work and something we're dealing with now is around the kind of aligning the legal and political action. Because the sanitation campaign was sort of at its height between, I would say, like 2012 and 2015, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because of the timeline, we're doing this from our latest annual report, we're doing like a big timeline of the sanitation campaign.
Can I take a picture of that after?
Yeah. So, this sort of, this whole time here was where it was sort of as political
fight,
you know, and there was a huge tension, the issue was raised into a big political issue, there was, you know, almost constant coverage in the media, there was big, you know, we had big political battles with the mayor, all that kind of stuff, so there was a lot going on. And then we really struggled in a later period to actually get the court case to launch launch that court case, mainly because it was just a very complicated case, and we acquired a huge amount of new evidence that we didn't anticipate. And so it took like nearly 2 years to get to the point where we could actually launch that case. And then once it was launched last year, and now it's all the delays and so like at this point, the issue is not, it's not, it's like the political action has now sort of died down.
Okay.
But now there's a court case. And ideally we would have had a court case that would have been made, if they were perfectly aligned, that's where it would have been. But it doesn't work that way.
No.
So now we're sort of having to basically figure out how to realign the game.
Okay.
And actually pull the political campaign again around the court case, and build the momentum again to support the case, because without the political pressure, there's less chance of winning the case.
Yes. Uh-huh. And you're still organizing in all the different areas, yeah? It's still happening.
Yeah, so we've actually expanded into quite a few new areas.
Oh, okay.
So within the metro, now in the north, in an area called Christchurch, which is like quite far along.
Okay.
And then we've gone southwest into several different areas in like Philippi, around Nyanga, around there.
Okay.
And then a little bit of organizing we've done in the sort of southern peninsula, so in areas like we hired a provincial organizer last year who's been actually leading
that
expansion work, which I think quite exciting.
Is there room for an Irish organizer? No. Can I go? Is that gone, maybe? Because if I leave it, I haven't asked you a question. That was one of the main questions that I'm had to ask individual quasi do was in terms of the organisational structure. So the like of the court case, who decides we're taking this to court, or was it always gonna, logically it's probably always gonna get to that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But do you talk to, you know, the groups? Is it an SJC, are you bringing it forward, or is it the residents as such? You know, our court case is there's a resident, but PPR and Equality Can't Wait are backing.
So it depends. In the sanitation case, and the decision to litigate was taken by the elected leadership organization.
Okay.
The branch
leaders. Yeah.
The exact form that it took was actually then something that was worked out between between the program staff, the lawyers, the attorneys, the council, all of that. In terms of applicants, so in the sanitation case, the SJC is an applicant as an organization. And then there are several other co-applicants who are actually residents of the former settlement.
Yeah, okay.
So that's the way the sanitation case as well. Our policing case is a little bit different.
Different than what we're following on that one.
Yeah. So that one is, there aren't individuals who are applicants. The SJC is an
Okay.
So the three are now co-applicants.
Okay.
Yeah, and on the policing side, it's also been an interesting journey because I'm sure we told you about the Khalid Commission inquiry into policing. No. So in 2013, 2014, we were involved in a commission of inquiry into policing in Khayelitsha, which was something that we called 4 years before, from 2012, which eventually we managed to get established. And we were one of the complainant organizations.
Okay.
And the commission had public hearings in 2014.
Okay.
And it was a very powerful process. It was great. I'll give you a little booklet about it.
Yeah,
it was
please.
One of the SJC's greatest victories, I think. And it came out with really hard hitting good recommendations.
Okay.
But for a year after that, the police minister just refused to play ball and they wouldn't act on them. So it took like probably 18 months of ongoing campaigning to actually get the police to act at the national level, because at the local level there was a lot of movement.
Mm-hmm.
So at the local level in Khayelitsha, things actually improved a lot as a result of the commission. But the national minister wouldn't commit to anything. So eventually, what did happen was a joint sort of task team was set up between the police, the provincial government, and civil society organizations to monitor and implement the commission's recommendations. So there has been quite a lot of good movement on that in the last while, and they are actually implementing several of those. But one of the key issues which the police refused to deal with was the issue of police resourcing.
Okay.
And that's why we launched the litigation, which was also launched last year against the police minister on inequitable police resourcing. And so that case is now dealing with the fact that in places in Khayelitsha and younger poor black townships, the police, the resources are incredibly skewed away from these areas.
Okay.
So like where the populations are greatest, where the most severe crime is, which has the least police resources.
So that makes lots of sense.
Yeah. So like places like Camps Bay, Rondebosch, those areas have like far more police resources. And basically what we discovered through the commission was that essentially the way that they allocate resources is done through a national policy. The way they allocate resources is essentially like the way they did it during apartheid. So the change. But hence like white areas have more police. Plus then you have the fact that like those areas also have private security.
True, yes. It's not as if it's needed as such.
Yeah, private security, their homes are secure, all that kind of stuff. So so now we're litigating against the minister. And what's interesting is what's just happened in the last couple of weeks, was that we found out that, have you been to Musenberg?
No.
So do you know where Musenberg is? So it's basically like if you go south from Cape Town, down to the southern part of the peninsula towards Cape Point.
Okay. Yeah.
Musenberg is a small suburb on the seaside suburb.
Okay.
On the way down, I mean it's part of the city of Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's about a 25-minute drive from the city centre.
Okay.
And we found out that the police basically were planning to spend 100 million rand on upgrading the Musenberg police station and turning it into this like really fancy police station and blah blah blah. And meanwhile, the police have been promising to build an additional station for Makaza and Khayelitsha for like 10 years and haven't done it.
So I'm assuming Musenberg is like an area that doesn't need any.
So the interesting thing is that Musenberg is a predominantly in a white middle class area.
Okay.
So Muizenberg, the police station in Muizenberg services a few other areas that are not in Muizenberg but like outside of Muizenberg, which are poor, like black and coloured areas.
Okay.
But the problem with that is that those areas have been open for years, basically saying like this police station is so far from where they need, and it's completely inaccessible. And then actually what's needed are like police stations on that side of the city where they are. So when we found out about that, we launched an immediate campaign around this and got all these people and sort of organizing, blah, blah, blah. And eventually the deputy minister of police, we met with him and other Kyrgyzstan stakeholders, and then the police basically committed to like stopping this 100 million rand upgrade. And promised that the money would go to station places like Neo-Chair, Kyrgyzstan, etc. So now we're basically trying to campaign on, we're basically saying that that's good that it stopped, but actually part of it needs to go to those areas.
Yes, surrounded, yeah.
And so that's what we're working on now. But what's interesting is what's come out of this whole situation is that the deputy minister also said that he acknowledges that the resourcing issue is completely wrong and that they're not going to oppose us in court. So they were basically hinting at a settlement.
Okay.
So now our lawyers have written to their lawyers basically saying, like, this is what the deputy minister said.
Yeah.
You know, what say you? So we're trying to get an answer from them about whether the police are seriously going to
do something.
Yeah. And there might be a settlement done in this case rather than going through full litigation, which would be quite nice.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks. But if that doesn't happen, then the case will be going forward, and we'll just continue.
We'll try with it, yeah. Thank you for seeing me.
Okay.
Really appreciate it.
Cool.
Can we take pictures?
Yeah.
To prove I was here and done some work today. It's terrible if they don't trust you. I say this last time around, because Sean was there, so we were going out every night, you know, for like dinner or whatever. This time around, somebody says to me about having it. I was like, I haven't had a beer. I may get one tonight or something, because I can't go home and say that I haven't had Black Label, but nobody will believe you. Doesn't give you a really bad hangover though.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't mind taking, can I take a few pictures in here and then?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Pass, can I get one with Jumeza again and stuff? Is that alright? Thank you. Thanks very much.
No problem.